I'm looking at the loans, I'm looking at the pipeline, but I said, my team gives a higher level of service and touch than I ever could because I'm only one human being. You know, there's four LOs on my team. They only work with my customers, my realtor partners, and they do a better job than I ever did because I'm only one person. I just couldn't get to the stuff quick enough.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Lending Leadership, The Mortgage Pros. I'm Tom Mills, one of your co-hosts here with my partner, Dave Holland. And we have Rachel Tresh joining us today in placement of Robert Filial. So going to have a little fun. And we've got a great topic today. I'm really looking forward to it. We're going to kind of interview Dave a little bit. I remember when we, embarked into this partnership, Dave talked a lot about, paving the path for other originators and mistakes he learned along the way, and how we could really build a platform that could help originators through that path. And today we want to start kind of a part one of two series. So, how do you go from zero to $50 million and then double it to $200 million and beyond? Today we're going to sit down with Dave, who's been 25 years in the business, has funded nearly $2 billion in personal production and over 10,000 transactions. In part one, we're going to rewind to the early years, talk about how Dave built his reputation to allow him to get to that level of production of $50 million, what he had to change before he could really break through it. But stay tuned for part two as well, where we'll unpack how he scaled past $100 million and beyond. So super excited for today's episode.
Oh, you make me sound so important. It's humbling. I love it. I love it.
Dave, that's a huge number, though. As we were talking about this, all right, what? Look back at your 25 years of business and how many families were served and how much was funded in transactions. I mean, $2 billion, that is quite a legacy. You could stop here. You could stop here if you wanted to, but I think we're just getting started.
Yeah. I mean, I always wanted to do produce loans, a lot of grit, get in there, do it, but that's not, certainly I want to do loans. I want to help my realtor partners, want to make money, help clients, but now that's not my 100% focus. I want to help other loan officers, right? Do the mistakes that I have made. We were talking and I guess, can we call it the green room? We were talking in the green room before. And this will kind of plan what we're talking about. I said to my wife 4 or 5 years ago, how come we didn't go to Spain or Central America or the islands before we had kids? I have four kids. And she kind of rolled her eyes and puffed at me and said, because you were always working. Mm-hmm. That's all you did. 7 days. We go to Bethany Beach, Delaware for 3 days, a long weekend, because I had to get back to work. Or when we had kids, I would always take the kids back to take naps. And I'm not like a dad who's the nap king. I'd go back and basically hide in the closet and work for 3 or 4 hours. And I was I was lying about how much I was working because I needed to get work done. Until I found a better way, which I guess we'll get into part two. But it gave me the core of my systems and process and what I need, what I do now and what I needed to do to be more successful.
I love this. I love this topic. Tom, you came to us and you were like, hey, I want to talk about this tactical blueprint because so many loan officers fall into that same trap that Dave fell into. I know you had fallen into it. Robert shared in the past that he's fallen into it, but how do you get out of that? And I love that you wanted to talk about this because I don't think you're alone in that, Dave. I think that is most people. They think that's how it needs to be. Yeah. And it doesn't. Until you're on the other side of that and you realize the strategic and tactical ways that you can get out of that, it doesn't have to be like that.
Well, the most respectable thing about how you built your business here and where it is today is you mentioned, helping other loan officers, which you do, we're doing every day. But your business is still thriving. So you've really built your business to a point that you are able to go, pay it forward in a way, but still serve your referral partners, your team is rocking, you know, continuously having some good months. And, you know, obviously you're respected, you know, here throughout the industry, very much here at HMA, and a leader to our originators. And, you know, I think that you have got a great bit to share with us today. I totally lost my train of thought. That part's going to get totally thrown out, but
You're great. You're doing great. Let's back up.
So many loan officers, like we have some of our LOs in coaching right now, and I was speaking with one yesterday, and he goes, "I don't think coaching's for me. I'm not that type of guy." And I said, "Well, John, how did you learn?" And he learned, we've been in the industry almost the same amount of time, same way. Like, here's a call sheet, here's a pen, here's a 1003, there's the phone. Good luck, kid. Let's go make some money. That's basically how I started off, right? And when I was thinking about what to talk about for the show, what I started to do when I was younger, like, I lived in my grandparents' basement. I played the banjo. Like, these were dark times for Dave. These were not like great times in my life. Actually, they were special times. But I used to go home with just pages of paper, like, what is it, the 4200, the Blue Book for FHA, the Fannie and Freddie books, the VA circular. I would read this shit for hours and just learn and highlight, because I didn't really have much other business going on, right? And I didn't have anyone to say, "Hey, kid, like, here's what you do." Like, I think some of our loan officers now, we have some really successful loan officers here, and they're like in their mid to late 20s. And I'm like, I told the one, I said, "Mike, I wish I had this when I was your age," right? So there's so much more of a path forward with people getting the more coaching and mindset and stuff like that. But all I did was grind. Like, when I got a transaction early on, I was so happy. I'm like, I can like pay my rent this month. Like, one or two was gravy. All the rest after one or two was gravy.
Yeah.
You'd
say early on, you made a commitment to like learning really early on. You just wanted to try to learn everything you could.
Be a master of my craft. And I think that's a little lost now with some LOs, but back then, like, you had to be a master of your craft. Things, I feel like loans now are easier and harder, but yeah, I became a tactician. I read, I'd spend hours a day reading the guidelines, and I knew everything inside and out. I think to be successful in the early 2000s pre-crash, you needed that.
Yeah. Tell us about your, like, you know, obviously to get, you know, I think we broke this into two segments. Everybody kind of plateaus at a different, you know, different level of production. And today it's harder to plateau, you know, to plateau where people could before, because there's so much more involved with the transaction. We nurture them so much differently. You know, and I know you're really efficient. So you were able to, you know, before you even got assistance and really build a team, you were doing, you know, nearly $50 million in production all on you. So step back a little bit, you know, to get to like $50 million in production. At that time, you're probably 160,000 loan amount average. So a lot of units there, right? Yeah. So you were getting referred, and, you know, you obviously established referral partners through some way through a reputation. Tell me about some of the things that you did that established that reputation. You mentioned learning and being that student, but what are some of the tactical stuff that helped you establish a reputation, allows you to, I mean, that's top producer level, you know, you did that on your
especially own. Back then.
Very challenging.
Yeah. Two quick points. Everyone has a ceiling. You know, sometimes that's 10 million. Sometimes it's 20. I think most people top out around 30 before they need help. I guess my technique to break through that and do 50, because this is back in the day, remember, right? When we had paper applications, we didn't have POSs, I didn't have a CRM, there was no e-sign. I would print everything out, meet you in person, hopefully at the office. Or if Rachel was doing a refinance, I'd print everything out, highlight where you need to sign, and send back. So I think the one year I did like almost 300 transactions without assistant. My strategy, Tom, was just to put in the hours, 12, 14, 16 hour days. It was painful. Like, when you picture someone, the first guy to the pole, a Norwegian, he took like dog sleds, right? and dogs to get there. And he made it like in 3 days, and the British were manhauling stuff. Right. And they died on the way back. That was me. I was the British. Like I would die for it. But how I established, I don't know. We talked about that question. I think it was, I always said what I was going to do. You know, I didn't lie to the agents, to my realtor partners or my customers, which is important. Right. And instead of, if I was doing a deal with you, Tom, and you were the realtor and I screwed something up or something went sideways, instead of like hiding from it and burying my head in the sand, I owned it right away. I knew that instinctively, right? I knew to own it right away, because if you keep putting off, people just get angry and angry. The closer it compounds your problem. So I own stuff. And then, you know, just hard work. We didn't have a CRM. So how I would update agents was via email. And I was a coward at first. I would call their office number, where a lot of agents even 10, 15 years ago weren't in the office, and leave a voicemail because I don't want to talk to them. So I would update them before I even got into coaching. I would know to update them on a weekly basis. And just, you know, whatever I said I would do, like my word was my bond, and that's kind of what I did. And, you know, in Pittsburgh, it's not a massive city, right? So word got around in some areas, and I did a great job for Agent A, and they referred me Bob or Julie, and just kind of went from there. But the usual stuff, like hard work, you know, is a given in our industry if you're going to be successful, right? And really living it and having a passion for it. Having a lot of grit. I know that's a word that's tossed around a lot, but having a lot of grit and humility. And then wanting so bad not to fail, I worked really hard.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up, not wanting to fail, but I do actually want to talk about those moments that the door gets slammed in your face. And in sales, you know, the more no's you get, the closer you are to a yes. How did you handle rejection in that early stage of starting off your career? You know, as a young buck, were you, did rejection really kind of break you down, or were you like, okay, next, let's go?
I mean, I wasn't that resilient. It broke me down, certainly. You know, yeah. I was young. I was 22. I had my uncle's suits, and I had like one sports jacket, and I looked like I was about 14, right? And I would go weekly to agents' office with rate sheets, right? Pass out rate sheets, and they go right in the garbage can. But I'd go, like, my area was the South Hills of Pittsburgh. That's where I could farm realtors and customers. So I'd go every week or twice a week. And some of these agents said, if we give you a deal, will you stop coming in our office? And I'd fax the rate sheets every day. When you'd put all the paper in, I'd fax the rate sheets to them every day. And I think I broke people down. They're like, this kid's not going away.
I feel like people need that now. I feel like sometimes we need a little bit more of, I don't want to say the old school drive, but sometimes people want something a little too quickly, and that they're not putting in that grit. We do have a good balance now, though, where we do have the tech and we do have a lot of tools that can help you, you know, save time with some of those activities. But I don't know, having that grit and starting that way, that's a unique quality. Yeah, I mean,
persistence is still something we believe in. I mean, you know, and salespeople like to be sold and want to feel that they, you know, somebody's coming after and wanting their business. And, you know, but did you, you know, while you were early on and you're learning about how to be a loan technician and your products and things like that, was there any sort of sales training, coaching, collaboration amongst peers and, hey, here's how you go grow your business? Did you have any of that going on in your first, like, 10 years?
No, I mean, very little. I mean, I started the company in 2005, so less than 5 years than I started. And quite frankly, if I'm being honest, I didn't really know what I was doing. I had a really good processor, a really, really good processor, and she helped me along the way. But there wasn't, besides reading, I was never a big reader. There wasn't, I mean, I don't know, Tom, 2005, 2006, I don't think there was much online in the way of sales mastery. I think I did something with Todd Duncan and then Greg Frost. I think he's out of Albuquerque. He's now deceased, but he was the first billion-dollar guy. And I went to, I remember going to a seminar for mortgages, and it was right after the crash, right during the crash. It was like 2008, 2009. And I walked away from that seminar and I said, I'm going to be successful. Like when these people had no, these were not good loan officers, not that they have anything against tattoos, but I saw a guy with a tattoo on his neck and on his back of his head. I'm like, this is my competition. Like, I think I'm going to be okay. But no, I didn't, there wasn't those coaching groups and stuff back then. So I think loan officers coming up today, we always say at the company, Tom and Rachel, like, get in our draft, like, let people who have done it pave the way. Like, I'm not the smartest guy, but I am damn good at copying people.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. We don't need to, you know, learn from somebody else, and the mistakes they made along the way makes it a lot easier. And that's something we really believe in. I know one of the things you do, I see you do really well, is implement. You implement fast, you know, and a lot of people don't do that. A lot of people, salespeople in all industries, they go to conferences, they are real excited about these ideas where they're there. And it's like, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. Yeah. Like, one of the things I've always respected about you is you're back to work on Monday, putting it into place, and you made a decision, you're note taking on the flight home, you know? So I respect that about you. And I think that's one of the keys, man, is how to, you know, learn, you know, ask questions around it, and then try to implement it in your way and do it fast. And I think a lot of people fear that for some reason.
Yeah. Well, or they go back to their company, right? And they're like, hey, I learned all this stuff at this conference. And then, you know, the old bucks are like, yeah, that's not the way we do it. We do it this way. Like, and when you do that, we all know this on this call, you cap yourself, right? And then you're doing non-productive income activities that you can hire someone out to do it at $25, $30 an hour.
Yeah, I remember that. You know, there was this phase where coaching and in this business, like, launchers really wanted to, you know, wanted to learn to be better. And that was a thing. A lot of companies had that way about them. A lot of aged leaders that, you know, were kind of dying. They weren't hip to the new concepts. And they would just say, oh, that stuff doesn't work. It's just blah, 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 blah. And you know, you look today and that stuff works, you know, and a lot of those people that didn't think like that, the business has passed them by. And those that embrace learning and embrace what's new and embrace ideas, collaboration amongst their peers, they're the ones that are still thriving today, you know, and doing it easy too. Because, I mean, right now, I mean, you know, the business that you're doing now, flashback, you know, even when you're doing half of it, you're doing, I don't know, 25% of the work putting into it now because you have a team around that's doing things and giving it even a higher level of service.
Well, that's the thing. I just came from a meeting with one of my realtor partners, a newer partner, hope to be a newer partner. And I explained the team concept. I said, hey, don't worry. I'm involved in every transaction. In a way, I am. I'm looking at the loans. I'm looking at the pipeline. But I said, my team gives a higher level of service and touch than I ever could because I'm only one human being. You know, there's four LOs on my team. They only work with my customers, my realtor partners. And they do a better job than I ever did because I'm only one person. I just couldn't get to the stuff quick enough. You know, when I came back from my first coaching group, and he'll never listen to this, my old partner, Jonathan, he goes, that stuff's all bullshit, right? And then he saw my production keep going up and up and up, and his eyes kind of perked up, and he implemented a lot of the stuff that I was doing. And I never gave him a hard time about it. But it does seem like pie in the sky, but it works, right? And I was at a point in my life, which I know we'll get to the next episode, where my wife and I just had our fourth kid, and I did not want to work 12 hours was generally the minimum. I didn't want to do it anymore. I was burnt out. I didn't want any more realtor partners. I was happy with 40 or 50 million, and that's all I wanted to do. But then I found a better way. So,
so how long were you kind of, I don't want to say stuck at that ceiling of around 40, 50 million, but how long did you linger there before kind of catapulting to the next level?
Probably from about 2010 to 2018. I mean, I did, you know, decent numbers in 2009 and 2010 and 11, depending on the refi market and stuff like that. But I my ceiling was 40 to 50 million. I could not physically do any more business. And by that point, we had eSign and some other technologies, but I couldn't do any more. There just wasn't enough hours in the day. I look back, I'm like, how the hell did I do this? Like, no idea.
And again, you're only one person. So it was just you on the team. You and a processor at that point?
Me and a processor. I did hire an assistant in 2016. She was good, but I didn't use her properly because I couldn't let go. And I think I almost killed her, and she probably still hates me because, and she'll never listen to this either, because I micromanaged the shit out of her. And I just didn't let go because I didn't have the right mindset, and no one showed me how to do it. You know, yeah. God bless her. She said, you need to read these three books. I'm like, whatever. I'm not, let's just grind, baby. Let's get it done.
Well, I know today you believe in it's more than just people. It's about systems and people. Yes. You know, when you were just like a one-man show, you know, now with the team, it's, you know, we believe that same way every time, and we preach that. But, you know, when you were individual, did you have any of that? Did you have a system for how you did things?
I did. I don't think it was a great system, but it was basically talk to the customer, sell them, either FedEx in the documents or try to get them in the office. At a certain point, I stopped doing house calls. But yeah, and then just grind it through as quickly as we can in processing. So it collect all the documents up front so I have them. But if someone pushed back, just write them a pre-approval, make sure I was safe, and move forward quickly. Because, you know, you got to remember, going back 10 years ago, it was tough to close a transaction in 30 days. Like it wasn't a given. Now we get 30-day transactions. I don't even start sweating it as long as I have 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. But back then, closing a deal in 30 days was complicated.
Yep. So today, you know, as we work with originators and try to help originators, we're not telling, you know, I don't think our message is go work 80 hours a week like Dave did. You know, go do this, do it alone. You know, don't go to conferences, you know, it's not what we would say. So let's start to break that down a little bit based upon, like, you know, what you've learned and then looking at today, how the business has evolved, you know, what would you do? What are some of the habits that you would have that, you know, that I know are a lot of habits we believe in, but let's talk a little bit about those like Monday through Friday habits for an originator that's in the middle of that, you know, doing a couple million dollars a month in origination. What do you think are some of the key habits?
Be time blocking, which I'm still not good at, right? Because I get back into my transactions, like old habits die hard. Mm-hmm. Time blocking, you know, you got an 8-hour day, you should be making calls, you know, especially if you're not doing a lot of business for 2 hours a day. Just hit the phone really hard and get as many face-to-faces in as possible. The phone's not going to ring. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, great when you're involved in a transaction, have great communication with all parties.
Some of the ways that, you know, you communicate now throughout a transaction?
Our CRM updates all parties at various milestones. That's easy. That's taken off my plate. I'll try to call the agents or one of my loan partners 7 to 10 days. I break it up. I have 4 loan partners and I call their agents Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I try to get organized with that because I want to touch the agents because I want to see what's going on with the transaction and give them a good level of service. I send the commitment letters out. I'm all over that. We get the appraisals out as quickly as possible to all parties, just all the touch points that are anxieties for the realtors and are pinch points during the transaction. I just make sure those people are updated at all those milestones. And listen, the agents appreciate it. The customers appreciate it. The deals go smooth. Doesn't always translate into business every time, but you gain a reputation as a great communicator, which a lot of LOs are not. I don't know why they wouldn't call the listing agent. I mean, we talked about this as a company a couple of weeks ago. You know, for me, I want to give the listing agent good service because it smooths the transaction for my buyer's agent and my customers. Also, you know, to be frank, it's an audition too. But I've had LOs say, well, I don't want to call the listing agent because then they have my name and cell phone number. And if the deal goes south, they know how to go to hold of me. I'm like, that is like the worst mindset. Like, not many of our transactions go south, but if that's how you're walking into your day, we should probably get you, you know, some shock treatment.
Yeah.
They're going to find you.
They're
just because you're not calling them, they're going to find you.
You're on the internet somewhere.
Right. And I mean, to be able to have that conversation and smooth that out before it becomes a full blown, you know, fire. Yeah. It could just be something that could be handled ahead of time. I think you hit it on the head, the communication piece. Why are people so afraid to communicate? What is it?
Are they afraid of rejection?
Maybe.
I mean, if you're afraid of rejection in this business, because I've always said we're in technical sales. So we're selling a product, a widget that's complicated, right? But there is a huge sales and marketing aspect. But Tom, if I had to do it all over again, right? Having so much knowledge in the mortgage business is both a blessing and a curse. Sometimes I feel like I over-communicate or get involved in stuff like your average LO at XYZ Bank or credit union aren't going to get involved in. I would, and I'm stealing this from our friend Rich Herbinski. Why is this not on silent? I'm stealing this from our friend Rich Herbinski. I would create a content and marketing machine, right? I would put me, or probably not me, a better version, cooler looking version of me as the content and just bring in loans like that. You don't need, you can have great people behind you that have the knowledge in this day and age, right? And companies are tolerant of it. You see some of these LOs who are just doing gobs of business that are like YouTube stars. And I'm sure they're all awesome people, right? But I bet a lot of them don't know shit about the blocking and tackling of mortgages, right? But they know how to drive the business in. So what's more important, you know, from a production revenue standpoint? It's not what you know. It's how the doing the deals is the easy part at the end of the day. The hard part is driving in the business.
It's finding what your superhuman power in this business is, and usually it's what you like, you know, and you're really good at, and it's also what happens to make you money, and you know, I think a lot of people run to the safe place, you know, the safe place is email, the safe place is, you know, the to-do list, you know, like that's the things you have to do versus the things you should be doing, you know, and I think that those that find their superhuman power, they realize this is what I should be doing, and they feel empowered to go do that more. And, you know, and then the results come. So what would you say, Dave, is your superhuman power?
Whoa. A high tolerance and threshold for pain. I mean, I'm half joking. I'm half serious, right? And I generally most days, I like what I do. I think we brought this up on a podcast months ago. It's like my middle daughter, Mary, said, Daddy, you always look happy. I said, I do because I genuinely like what I do. Like, I think this is what I was built to do. You know, help loan officers, help borrowers, meet with realtors, get in the hard deals. Like I love what I do. And a lot of people don't have it. And I think a lot of LOs are either in it for the money or just in it for like a job. Not a lot of those, some of the LOs. And if you don't have a true passion for it, then you'll never be truly successful.
Yeah. Well said. That's probably anything in life, not just this business, but this business takes a lot of emotion, a lot of grit, a lot of hard work, a lot of pain, infliction. So very much so. I very much so it applies to what we do.
And we know this, right? This business will suck the life out of you if you aren't careful. It will eat you alive, right? Yeah. You know, if you compare yourself to other LOs, like, oh, why didn't Judy send me that deal? She sent it to Frank instead. Like, if you get in that mindset, it will eat you alive because they're not so much rejecting you, they're just rejecting your offer at that time. Mm-hmm. So it can be an emotional roller coaster as well, too. Got to block it out, Rachel. Put the blinders on.
Well, I think that's important. Again, like Tom said, in any sales role, you're going to come up against that. So to have that high tolerance for pain, to have that thick skin, to know your superpower, those are all catalysts to get you to the next level. And to keep in mind, what's your goal? What do you want?
Yeah.
If you don't know where you're going, then any road will take you there, and maybe not the easiest road, maybe not the best road.
Yeah.
So have that goal.
And I would add, like, if your company's not willing to entertain some form of assistance at some point, you're going to cap yourself, because this business is not impossible to do alone, but unless you have a good, back office processor, underwriter, closer. And once you get to a certain point, you're going to cap and you're going to need some help, because mm-hmm. you can't do it all alone unless you want to work 7 days a week, 12, 14 hours a day. But even then you'll cap yourself. And that's what we'll get into the next episode. I did like 190 million in 21, and there's no way one human being can do 750 loans by themselves. Even if you work 24 hours a day, it's not possible. And it's systems and process and a bunch of other buzzwords that we're going to have ready, same way every time. But you need that in place to scale and do a lot of volume.
Yeah. You think about the last 25 years, I think you've been originating in the last 7 years. So, really a quarter, roughly a quarter, the last quarter of your career is probably learned more in that time. From a sales, perspective of really how to grow business than any of the other, 18 years that you were in it.
100%. 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm excited to dive into that too. I know it's a cliche, but instead of working harder, getting into that working smarter, more strategic, more tactical mindset, and how, like Tom said, the last quarter of your career being able to blow past 100 million when you were stuck at that 50 million ceiling, like, that's powerful stuff. Absolutely. That's life-changing stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. So episode 2, we'll talk a little bit more about that and the way Dave grew his business, and then, how we kind of built that ecosystem here as leaders to enable others to have the same type of path, and how this podcast purposes, hopefully somebody listens and there's some things, tips and tricks and little nuggets that we give them that help them along their way.
There's a better way, right? And people have done it. So if there's not someone at your company who's doing, first of all, there's someone at your company, grab him or her, chat with them about it. If not, grab another mentor outside your company. And there's plenty of amazing coaching groups too, who are doing this at a very high level, mm-hmm. high level.
Love it. I'm excited to dive in. Don't forget to like and subscribe to Lending Leadership, The Mortgage Pros, and The Creative Brief. And this is great, Dave. I'm excited to dive in and get some of those ideas and structure and really get that blueprint in episode 2. We'll catch you next time.
Yeah.
Thanks,
everybody.
Thanks, everyone.